Zach Browning here to tell you about an offer you simply can't pass up. If you're looking for the best coverage of Indiana football and basketball, which includes recruiting, weekly chats, podcasts, as well as access to the best national team out there, then look no further than thehoosier.com. The best part? It's just $1 for the first week. Oh, and did I mention that you get a full year of access to The Athletic when you sign up? You can't beat the coverage, and you can't beat the deal. So head over to thehoosier.com today and sign up for just $1. It'll be the best decision you ever made.
Huddle up, football fans. Tailgate season is here, and nobody gets you ready for game day like Academy Sports and Outdoors. Swing by your local Academy store or shop online at academy.com to find everything you need, from grills to jerseys and more. Be a watch party legend with gear from top brands like Nike and Under Armour, all at unbeatable prices every day. With 8 Academy stores across Indiana, including our Bloomington location, fun can't lose, and neither can you. Gear up today at Academy Sports and Outdoors.
Welcome to Indiana Sports Beat Radio.
So for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world, it's time! Three on the way. Oh, Elian! Elian! And Indiana wins the ball game. Know your role and shut your mouth, you jabroni.
Throw game for the win. Gone. Goodbye. Touchdown, Indy. Woo! IU. America. They got a football team now.
It's pretty simple. I win. Google me.
You know that I'm the cream of the crop.
Oh. Now, here's Jim Coyle.
Radio coming to you on this glorious Friday. Glad to have you along, as no matter where or how you're listening on one of our great radio station affiliates like 97.7 ESPN, The Ref, always the right call in Evansville, Southwest Indiana, and up in the region on the voice of the region, 1230 AM, 104.7 FM, WJOB, and in Fort Wayne on Fort Wayne's only sports station, 1380 The Fan. Keep it locked where you got it throughout your day's travels for the best in sports and news content. And if you're following us on social media, you know what to do. We're glad to have you no matter what. An action-packed, filled day as we're all stocked up here. Go sell crazy someplace else. Todd O'Leary will join us. Zach Osterman. Tom Kakert, Alec Lasley not feeling well today. He's not, but we've got special guest J.D. Campbell coming in as well. He's going to join us. Big game this weekend, of course, for the Indiana Hoosiers as they will travel to Iowa City to take on the Iowa Hawkeyes and the Big Ten's all-time leading winner, Coach Kirk Ferentz. Huge soccer game tonight. Match, I should say. Huge soccer match in Bloomington. Another Big Ten blowout as the UCLA Bruins, the all-time winningest program in men's soccer with 1,029 wins, comes into Bloomington to take on the winningest program by percentage, the Indiana Hoosiers, with a winning percentage of 77%. IU has won six of the last seven versus the Bruins. So that bodes well. Indiana, having been ranked at number one at one point this season, still up there. That I would love to go to that match. I'm hoping to, but I've also got to go to Iowa. So we'll see how that works out. Another great game in the NFL last night. Gee whiz. How in the Hades did Seattle come back to win that game? Wow. But again, have you noticed across sports, it's getting tighter. It's getting more even. This was a thing in college basketball and football the last couple of years, but it seems to be trending in the NFL. Tons of games this year have already been excruciatingly close if you're a fan, but spectacularly close if you're just a casual viewer. So, we've got college football tonight. The Reds win, but so do the Mets. So no one picks up ground there. Can Indiana keep Kirk Cignetti? You know, they're going to come looking. And a program like Florida, can they come up with, I don't know, $12 million a year? That's probably what it would take, I think. The NCAA has now ruled former G League Ignite player Theory Darlin eligible to play Division I basketball at Santa Clara. His agent, Tom Remassar, told ESPN, Darlin becomes the first player to obtain NCAA eligibility after playing professionally in the G League, where he spent the past two seasons. He will enter college as a junior with 2 years of eligibility remaining. Wow. I just don't even know what to say to that. I don't even know how to respond there. And if anybody was worried about Lewis Moore getting his eligibility, what, are you kidding me? You can go play in Europe professionally football and probably still remain eligible. I don't even know what to say there, man. They're just cutting it all loose. Ryder Cup, there you go. Gritty got it going. The Ryder Cup underway, began early this morning, continues throughout the day. And if you wonder why they're starting so early with so few players, they're playing two rounds today and tomorrow. 36 holes today, 36 holes tomorrow. Looking forward to this weekend's slate of college football games. Of course, none more so than Indiana traveling to Iowa. I think that Indiana wins that game by two scores, at least. I don't want to base that on last week, but Indiana is a top five team to me. They are one of the most complete teams. I've said this many times. They're one of the most complete teams in college football on both sides of the ball. And they're only going to get better. You haven't seen everything yet. You think they're not holding something back for Oregon, who takes on Penn State this weekend? That's going to tell us a lot. Or maybe it won't. We're expecting it to. Bama plays Georgia. Man. John Mateer, the early Heisman leader, because ESPN pumped him up like nobody I've ever seen, has hand surgery, out for probably 4 weeks. We shall see. Lots of great games on the docket. Don't forget to get your picks in for the college pick'ems, for the ISB pick'ems. I've got mine in. Let's see. The Big Ten matchups this weekend. The Big Ten, USC, comes back across the country. This time they're heading to Champaign, Illinois to take on the number 23. Do they have any fight in them, Illini? Rough for USC. It's a noon game. Why do they keep doing that to these poor West Coast teams? I don't understand that. Why not at least give them a 3:30 game, for gosh sakes? Rutgers at Minnesota. Rutgers is a decent team, man, but boy, tough loss at home to Iowa last week. Now they have to travel to Minnesota. Number one, Ohio State, goes to Washington. This will be an interesting game to keep your eye on, people. Ohio State, Washington, this is a tough place to play. It's loud out there in the Puget Sound. Washington's got a sneaky good offense. UCLA is at Northwestern, a battle of the Knots. Mentioned Oregon at Penn State, and of course, the Indiana Hoosiers travel to Iowa City to take on the Hawkeyes. So there's everybody else is off this week. Glad to have you along on this fantastic Friday. We're back with more from Indiana Sports Beat Radio right after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, coming to you on this Friday. Glad to have you along. Man, a big weekend coming, and I'm looking forward to it. not going to look forward to the travel, but it is what it is. Before we get to that, Indiana gets a commitment from four-star Chase Branham, which Indiana basketball, I should say, jump-starting its 2027 recruiting class with a commitment. Todd Leary. Oh, let me get him in there. There you go. From myjumpshot.com, joining us. How are you, sir? He will be with us here momentarily, and his mic is muted at the moment. There we go.
Hey, now. Here we go. Sorry,
hey, now.
Gotta go video free here for a little bit.
That's okay. I tell everybody, I'm sure everybody wish I would go video free every day.
Me too.
Every day. Hey, Indiana gets a commitment from the 2027 class, and a good one by a four-star out of Chase Branham, point guard. That's kind of unusual in this day and time, getting a kid that far out yet, but you got to love that someone is already, they're that defined in what they want to do, where they want to go.
Yeah, it is. And you know, I'm a little surprised it doesn't happen more often. It used to happen more often. But, you know, I don't blame kids for, you know, going through and looking at all the possibilities and opportunities and visiting all the places. But you sure love a kid as a fan base. You sure love a kid that comes on a visit and just absolutely falls in love with it, because we all have fallen in love with Bloomington and the, you know, all the atmosphere and the campus and all of that. And to get a kid that shows up and commits is just something a little different, something a little more special. He'll always be a little bit more ingrained in the fan base than guys who maybe transfer in or, you know, visit 12 schools and put a hashtag not committed. I can't stand it when guys do that, put their picture of themselves on social media and with a, you know, a big Indiana jersey on, flexing and all that, and the hashtag not committed. Like, that, for some reason, that rubbed me wrong.
I get it. I don't like that they do it. It doesn't matter if it's Indiana or any school. I'm like, you should not put on the colors until you are a part of the program. That should be something that's special that only certain people get to do. But nobody cares what I think.
Jim, and even if you don't, like, even if you, like, I don't mind them trying the jerseys on and all that. Like, okay, get it. But that's fine. But don't, I mean, just don't put the not committed. Like, that sticks with you for a long time. Like, that, in my brain, that image of a player with that not committed sign sticks with their, you know, they're not 100% bought in. And that, you know, I've been there. I've lived that. And if you go there and you're not 100% committed, I hate to be this brash about it, but I almost would rather them not come.
Yeah. Hey, no problem with that. Well, no problem with that with Chase Branham, as I said early, 2027 commit, and commits to Indiana over Iowa, Tennessee, and other quality programs. He committed during his official visit over the weekend, which got fired up after that Illinois stomping, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, what a fun time for him to be there and witness and see all that. And you know, just seeing the video of, you know, him and Coach DeVries and all that, like, that's what I'll say amateur, even though it's kind of not really been amateur for a long time. But that's what college athletics is kind of about. And we miss that. So it kind of stands out now. It used to be, you know, that would be the case a lot. Teams, you know, coaches would throw a party when a guy committed to come there. I remember the day Alan Henderson, we were at practice, and the day Alan Henderson committed and coming to Indiana, Coach Knight sent us all to Zagreb's for dinner. We stopped practice, sent us to Zagreb's, and we were, you know, it was a fun day. And I kind of missed that side of it.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Man, I didn't know anything got him that fired up.
He did not get that fired up very often. And, you know, that was 1 year after missing out on Montross. You know, Montross was the year before that. We didn't get him. And gave it my best effort. Sorry, Indiana fans. I did everything I could. But, you know, Allen was that recruit. You know, he was that dude that you send the team to Zagreb's for, because he was that uber talented.
Well, no doubt about that, but it was surrounded by a bunch of those as well. But the good old days. Well, Indiana's kind of trending in that direction, but not in the direction of the NCAA, who I'm sure you saw this, Todd, but they have now ruled a former G League player to have eligibility to play NCAA Division I basketball.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? Right now, and can you blame them? Like, the NCAA is just trying to avoid lawsuits. I mean, they're sitting in a position where, they can get sued for anything right now. And so I think they're just kind of sitting back trying to do anything they can to not put themselves in a courtroom. And so, I mean, it's all of it's weird and unfortunate and doesn't make a lot of sense. And some guys that do get waivers and get to play, and some guys that don't, like, you know, the money used to be the thing. If you've taken money, that was why overseas players a lot, because, you know, European players or guys that play overseas, you know, they start getting paid sometimes in the sixth, seventh, eighth grade. And so that eliminated them from NCAA eligibility. Well, that's obviously not the case anymore. So this is not really a whole lot different than that. And I probably would expect to see more guys along those lines.
Absolutely. Got a little special guest sneaking in as well. JD Campbell sliding in with us. He wanted to say hi to Todd. And I don't know if JD, if you can hear me.
I can hear you. And perfect. Todd, it's been a long time. I think the last time we saw each other was in Fresh Time.
Yep, I think you're right. I think you're right. But yeah, hey, great to see or hear from you. We're both going video free here. I like it. Nobody wants to see you or either of us, but I certainly like hearing from you.
Well
yeah, you're putting all the pressure on my ugly face.
Yep.
Nothing ugly about it. But Todd, just hope everything's going well for you. We share a lot of the same sentiments. But again, you always have to evolve, and that's part of today's, mindset. And you just got to kind of go with the flow and keep things to yourself.
Yep.
Yeah. No, and you've been through all of that, JD, as a former SID at Indiana. You've seen it go from all kinds of different directions. And you probably heard me mention a second ago that the NCAA has now ruled a former G League player to have Division I eligibility. And I'm like, okay, where the hell is he going to stop? I saw Rick Pitino put out a tweet yesterday. He said, forget who the player was, but he said, I've got dibs on somebody who's in the NBA. So
probably LeBron. LeBron's got all his eligibility left, so it's probably LeBron.
There you go. I didn't think about that one. That's true. Oh, my. So that's funny. But, yeah. Well, big weekend coming up this weekend, guys, in college football. But for Indiana, especially after now they've jumped up to the top 11 after just throttling the number 9 Illinois team that came into Bloomington last week. And now they travel to Iowa City, which is a tough place to play, a great place to play, one of the great football and college football environments in the country, because Iowa, those farmers love their football, baby, and they pack it and back them all day long. It's a great place to be. Plus, you have the kids in the children's hospital next door getting to do the wave at the end of the third quarter, the greatest bar none sports tradition in all of sports. So just a lot going on this weekend.
Well, Todd may remember this place, but I remember my favorite part of going to Iowa was the steak, Iowa Power and Light. That surprises you, doesn't it, Todd?
No, it does not, actually. Like that, it's memorable. And you know, the fun part, Jim, it's really awesome that you had JD on here, because a lot of people don't understand what the sports information directors go through and do and how many different roles and hats they put on. And back in, you know, it's a little different now with social media, but back in my day, like,
Todd was helping people like me on the
That's exactly right. That's what I was going to say. Like, JD and the SID is the guy that protected us from you know, saying stupid stuff and getting those interviews that, you know, guys are trying to dig dirt out of you. And those, so, you know, JD traveling on all of those trips and going and doing that stuff, going to Iowa City. You know, I always remember every time you go there, it's freezing cold, but, you know,
a bit.
Certain things stand out about trips, and the meals in Iowa were definitely one. The ice cream that you get inside the stadium. I mean, it doesn't make any sense to me, but, you know, one of the coldest places on the planet, and they serve ice cream in the arena, and it's the best ice cream you've ever had for some reason. I don't know why, but those are just the small things that you remember about that and those trips and different venues that you go to.
My favorite Iowa basketball story with that was my first year. And that was when Kelvin said, we're going to fly the day of the game. And I think it was January 3rd, 2007. And, you know, we stayed in that same hotel all the time there. You remember which one? Okay. And we landed. We took off in the morning, landed. And, you know, the bus always pulls up. And some guy came running out. You cannot be here. No, you cannot be there. And I said, excuse me, sir, this is Indiana basketball. I said, who are you with? And he goes, well, Mr. Obama is speaking in the hotel. And I had no idea who Barack Obama was at the time. I said, that's okay. We're not going anywhere. And we get all, you know, but I had no idea who he was. And then I think we won the game. We were right. Heavily favored. And I think, didn't they have a bunch of threes that just, go, you know, at toward the end that got made it close? I don't know if you remember, Todd, but that was my first Big Ten game.
I do not remember. I'm old now. I don't remember a lot of that stuff in that regard, but you know, those different, the funniest part of what you said was we stayed at the same hotel. Like Coach Knight was the biggest creature of habit on the planet. I'm not sure we ever stayed at a different hotel than whatever the original was we went to in a certain city. And I mean, heck, I could tell you the menu at that place we went to in Purdue all the time, that hotel in Wisconsin where you go down, you get on an elevator and go down from the lobby. Like, it's just weird, like all the weird things that go on. But yeah, we generally stayed, or almost always, if not 100% of the time, stayed in the same hotel every year that we traveled.
Yeah, I mean, I can only imagine. I keep telling people like JD and Kit Klingelhofer, man, the books that could be written.
Oh yeah.
Just from the what they have seen and not told, and boy, the stories, trust me, people, they are there.
I've said it from day one. The best book and the guy who would have the most stories on the planet is Tim Garl.
Tim Garl. Yeah, yep. I knew you were going to say that.
No doubt.
Yeah, I would have to agree with you. He's been there through all of it. He crossed over generations, man. I mean, generations and decades of Indiana basketball. So you're not lying, but that'll never happen. Just like Kit will never write a book. JD will write his own book, though. I've been trying to get him to write a book. He's got all kinds of different things he could do. So,
I told you it's a quarter way done.
Oh, that's it, man. Todd, where's Todd mentioned at? Where am I? Are we in it? That's about my first question today, always.
Probably September 26th, 2027 might be my insert into it.
Well, that'd be a good day to get
in. That's my contribution.
Yeah.
Vernon Maxwell is now Florida's leading scorer again. We're seeing so many changes with college athletics now. After he was involved in an NCAA investigation, they took all that stuff away. Well, now they've reinstated it, which I don't have a problem with. Should, what's his name from USC, get his Heisman back?
Yeah, right.
Reggie right. Bush.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, you go through all those things are, you know, they're just weird and unfortunate. And I mean, you know, I don't know, like, I think you can form opinions about those. And we don't know all the detail. That's the hard part of these scenarios, is we can form an opinion about it. But, you know, unless you know all the little details of everything, which we are never going to know, you know, we only form a judgment opinion. And whether you kind of like a guy or not, as to whether, you know, like the whole Pete Rose thing, like, you know, shouldn't Pete Rose be in the Hall of Fame? Of course he should be in the Hall of Fame. Is he one of the best baseball players of all time? Should that not be the qualifier? Yeah. I mean, that, to me, that's the case. But, you know, I don't make those rules, and we just go by it. I think Pete Rose probably has more notoriety off of not being in the Hall of Fame.
That's a great analogy. Also saw that Sister Jean, Loyola's Sister Jean, announced her retirement. Finally, that's what she'd been, 180 years old. Man, she's been a great run, and what a great inspiration she was a few years ago. That was fun to see that. 106. She is seriously 106 and announced her retirement. That has to be one of the oldest retirement announcements in the history of retirement announcements.
Jim, you never retire.
Not too many people get to there, so yeah, probably.
Jim, you never retire. You just change and do different things. You know,
absolutely. Hey, we've seen a buzz in the Heisman Trophy race too, which took a swing this week with two different things. First of all, Fernando Mendoza catapulted up as the betting favorite. And then John Mateer from Oklahoma has had hand surgery. He's going to be out for 4 weeks. He's out of the race. I don't care what anybody – I don't care what Kirk Herbstreit says. I don't care how much he tries to promote an SEC guy, which is what he's been doing from the jump. It's not going to make John Mateer the Heisman Trophy winner. That doesn't make Fernando that. Well, we'll have the season play out. But, man, Indiana in position to get a Heisman Trophy winner, something they have never – had, JD.
Well, you know, they've had some great players, and Anthony Thompson obviously is the one that is around my era, and guys like that, Antoine Randall-El. But you know, again, you have to. This is what I've always said. Each week, teams go through misery if they lose, and ecstasy when they win. They're national champions, they're dog meat the next. And Todd certainly can attest to that. He knows, you know, being an Indiana player, you've seen everything, the best of both worlds. And it's funny because when you get out there and, you know, we've already had, what, three head coaches fired in college football? And so I would just say the best thing you can do about it is not even do – well, in today's age, you know, you really – it's about getting out there and hoping it sticks. But I wouldn't even pay attention or worry about it. It's week four or three or five or whatever, however many games you played. And it's just too soon to even think about guys on the Heisman, because an injury can hit, boom, and that's it.
Ask John Mateer.
And Jim, ask Curtis Rourke. That's the SID side. That's the SID side right there. That's the guy who's tried to keep the media at arm's length all year long, and us in media people and fans want all the information and want to talk about it all we can. That's why I'm on the show every Friday. And JD, I completely agree with you. I don't follow the rankings too much. That's why the rankings are kind of embarrassing after the first couple of weeks, because you go look at how some teams were ranked to start and then what they end up being. And some teams weren't ranked and they're great players as well in the same category. And so the Heisman race is kind of in that same boat, but it'll change. You know, if we go back and look at it, you know, we do this every year when the NCAA tournament comes out and they announce the field and teams are left out and we throw a fit. I mean, we're mad about certain fan bases are pissed their team didn't get in and all that. But as soon as the tournament starts, that's all gone. We don't remember. Like, I don't remember who we were mad about last year. And we were super mad with, like, Indiana State, like, a year ago or whatever. We were so mad they didn't make the tournament. As soon as the tournament started, we all forget about that or whatever. And that's the way this Heisman race will be. You know, like, I'm sure people from Oklahoma are pissed that he's kind of eliminated from it right now. But if he comes back, and has some great games and gets to the college national championship game or whatever, he's right back in the race. So I know, Jim, you're kind of writing him off right now, and I do agree with you. I think your statement is very potentially accurate, but he could play himself back into it, even sitting out for 4 weeks. You get to the national championship game. Now they've got, what, 13, 14, 15 games if you get all the way to the finals. So he could play his way back into it, but it would take a very, very special performance to do that.
Yeah, absolutely, and the being in the SEC certainly helps him in having a mouthpiece like ESPN promote them. Which, and I'm not saying John Mateer's not very good at what he does, but you cannot crown people like they were trying to do. Just like you can't crown Fernando Mendoza. Now, if he does this at Iowa and he does that at Oregon,
Well,
that's a different story there. They were going to get into serious. It will become his to lose. He can turn it into that, JD.
Don't ever put that label on anybody.
Yeah, okay. I'm just saying,
don't ever put that label on it. Well, just to lose, and then
SID, you know, talking.
Yeah,
SID talking.
Well, that's because we're the smartest people on the planet.
Of course you are. I know that. We know that.
You know,
absolutely.
I mean, you got to sit there and like, okay, look, it's not even football season to me. All right, it's baseball season. See, it's baseball season. The best weekend of the year. I wouldn't even look at football when I was a kid until the World Series was over. So maybe the people that vote, maybe the people that think about different things, maybe they just ought to cool down and watch baseball at its finest, which, by the way, baseball is stronger probably than it's ever been since the strike in 94.
Still needs a salary cap.
No, there's not going to be a salary cap.
I know, but they need one.
No, they don't need anything. They just need to make.
The Dodgers have won the American League West 12 out of the last 13 years.
Well, like I say, that's for another day. But baseball is at its peak. It's global. It's got the best athletes it's ever had in the game. You got a catcher hitting 60 home runs. That's it.
Oh, that's amazing.
I'm done talking about baseball in this segment.
Let's talk about the Ryder Cup. Bring up the Ryder Cup.
Oh, yeah. JD doesn't care about golf.
That's why I was late joining the show here, because I got caught up watching Scotty Scheffler trying to make a putt on the fourth hole.
Did he make it?
He did not.
They're
off to a bad start. The United States is not off to a good start, but this foursomes is not their strong suit. So they'll make a comeback.
Team play is not their strong suit. Hey, we'll take a quick break. Indiana Sports Beat Radio, JD Campbell and Todd Leary with us right now. Back with plenty more right after these messages. Welcome back. Indiana Sports Beat Radio coming to you on this Friday. I hope you're having a good one, ready for the great weekend ahead. Todd Leary is with us. Former Indiana SID Mr. Campbell is with us as well. I was just looking at the AP ballots, guys, and I'm sure you both know who Brett McMurphy is, one of the national writers. And I hate to give him grief, but do you know that he did not have Indiana football on his ballot until they beat Illinois? I find that to be just ridiculous, personally.
I don't want to be redundant, but why does it matter?
It does.
It is. It's one of those things that if you don't – some people are like – right on the bandwagon. Other people are like, okay, prove it to me. And so, especially now, this time of year, you're going to have that. You're going to have that. They want to see a test. And so be it. Like I say, the polls.
That's a great point.
The polls do matter, I guess. But
it's more about putting perception and maybe you think that it may put a perception in a football playoff committee member's head or something.
Look, you keep rolling and everyone's going to be waiting for you to stumble. And once you stumble, then the haters hate. So, you know, that's just what it is. But, you know, don't get on a guy. Don't get on a reporter or anybody for leaving somebody off the ballot. You know, coaches, you know, back in the day.
Where's the fun in that, JD? Daggone it.
Do you know back in the day, let's say like 70s and 80s, you know, they had the coaches poll. You know what I'm talking about, the coaches poll?
Oh, yeah, it's still around.
Yeah, coaches weren't the ones who were voting. It was the SIDs.
I was going to say it's probably you or a manager. Or maybe Todd was putting the votes in.
And so just get off. Get off. Get off it.
Yeah, but I will say this. I'll say this about it, though. When you look at, like, when someone has a good or a bad experience with anything in general, but let's take with a trip to a university. Like let's just say Iowa, for example. We talked about that earlier on a trip to Iowa. They had great food. You know, that trip to me was fun because they had great food. Maybe that sports writer had a bad trip to Bloomington. Maybe he doesn't like – maybe Cignetti told him to FO someday. Like, we don't know. But there's probably a reason why you're in that – like, you get it. But at some point, his job and his reputation become on the line, and you've got to be able to back up why or why not you put a team in the rankings or you don't put them in the rankings. And so it doesn't matter in the long run. Look, I'll tell you this from a player's perspective. If you're sitting around looking at the rankings, you're not 100% focused on your job and what you're supposed to get done. And so all of the rankings and all of the voting and all of that stuff is for us. It's for the fans. It's for the media people. It's for those of us that make a living doing that. It's for the sports information director. It's for all of that. But the players and the coaches, that stuff doesn't really matter. And I think Cignetti follows it, or at least talks about it. He probably just talks about it more, because I think all coaches really kind of follow it. But at the end of the day, that's for us. You know, that's for us to argue about and bring that. Would you be bringing that guy's name up if he had Indiana in the rankings? No. So he kind of did his job in getting you to talk about him by not putting him in the rankings. Think about it that way.
Well, I'll go back at you and say, look, okay, everything, these things are for the fans. Well, trying to tell a kid not to have a social media account or to not look at, the first thing the kids do is go to their phone and they look and see who texts them. Maybe they go to, because they know. I always said, narrow your awareness.
So let me ask you this, JD. Let me ask you this. Okay. Do you think Peyton Manning and Tom Brady did that?
Yes.
I think you're wrong. I don't think they did.
No, I guarantee. Look, those guys are the most brilliant guys in the world. If they didn't look at it, they had somebody who did. And that person.
That I agree with. But they were laser focused on what they had to accomplish.
Well, yeah.
It did not affect their daily preparation and what they worked on and what they did. That's my opinion.
No, but the person who was responsible for it knew the right time and the wrong time to let them know about something. And it's like, you know this in sports as well. You want to be slighted. You do. As a coach, you want to be slighted because you're going to use it as motivation to your team. And I think Illinois came in here last week thinking, okay, we're the ones. And I think they just keep your mouth shut. Do nothing, say nothing, and just go out and prepare and play. But too many, you know, again, with the kids, they know everything. And coaches now know everything. There's somebody on their staff that's monitoring everything, especially in recruiting. And you just got to, again, I tell kids, hey, you shouldn't be on social media. And yeah, good luck. Not going to happen.
Heather Dinich of ESPN is another former IU grad. She's not a big fan of IU football. She has not shown much, I don't want to say support, but just doesn't seem to be more of an SEC person, which probably goes back to being an employee of ESPN. And that's sad that that's kind of where we are. I mentioned earlier that Kirk Herbstreit was pumping up John Mateer from the first snap of the season, it seemed like, because he was the SEC's best hope at that time. And I was like, man, why are you doing that? But, hey, it's where his paycheck comes from. But, man, that's the one thing I don't like about how we've had this division with the ESPN and the SEC, ACC, Fox, with the Big Ten and Big 12. I don't think Fox does it as badly, to be honest with you. And I've seen other people comment to that effect. I don't like it. And I think that some people see through that, but a lot of people don't.
I think it just mirrors the same thing that you see covering the regular world. You have certain media outlets that favor certain agendas. And again, I all that stuff is boring to me. You know, it's all boring, but that's just what happens. And when you're a partner with somebody in that, you're going to have some people have your back, and then other times they're not.
Todrick, I know you saw the Indiana shellacking of Illinois last week. What were your thoughts as that thing rolled out?
Well, my biggest takeaway was what an incredible atmosphere the whole place was. Like, not talking about the team, not talking about how they played, yeah, which was awesome and incredible. The atmosphere was electric. And, you know, my better half, Jessica, is from
the SEC.
I saw
you guys walking by there as I was coming in.
She's from Georgia. She grew up in the going to Georgia games. And so that's the bar that she has. And she was wowed by how awesome the atmosphere and crowd. It was an incredible night in general. The game was great. I mean, I'm not even talking so far about how awesome the team played. All three phases of the game were awesome and incredible. I mean, it was just one of those terrific games and atmospheres that I'm so glad I was there and got to be a part of, because I don't think you can explain to someone that wasn't there how cool it was.
Oh, the noise was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And I didn't get to hear it. JD, the one thing I always complain about, and I shouldn't, but at the IU football press box, it's like a tomb. You cannot hear a single thing from the outside. And I know the intention is so writers are not interrupted or whatnot, but I wish we could just get a taste of what that noise is like, because last week was unbelievable and I should have stepped outside, but I was too into covering the game and didn't do that. But I saw a video on it and I'm like, holy smokes, it's never ever been like that. And the fans were ramped up for that contest, and boy, did they get paid off big time. But it was incredible. It's nothing like Indiana has ever seen on the football field.
Well, because I'm a cantankerous ogre today, this is what I'm going to tell you. And this is what I'd say to anyone that asked me about that. I do understand radio wanting the windows open. But if your only seat in a football stadium, like mine most of the time, is in a press box, and you know the NFL press boxes are great because they're all open air, you know, they're all open, you hear everything, and obviously in bad weather places you can't have the air open. I'd rather be in a press box and not hear a thing than be out in the stands. And again, my own personal thing, when I went to the Lions game 2 weeks ago, the first thing I texted my wife, we need earplugs, because it was that high. Now,
you are cantankerous today. Damn.
I'm as calm.
I'm kidding.
No, I don't mind that. I don't mind that. I'm just saying I'm going to always defend the perspective that, you know, I'm not going to say anything bad about anybody or anything, but I'm just.
Oh no, I'm just saying.
I don't go to games anymore. I don't go to games. I only go. I work 25, 30 college basketball games a year. I only went to. God, did I even go? I don't even know if I went to a. Oh yeah, I did. I went to one Tigers game, and I just don't like going as a fan, man. Not when I can have four things right around me, because now I'm technologically savvy, and I can watch four things at once with TV, computer, phone. So
what?
Well, Jim, I'll give you the flip side of that is, I sat in a suite for a game, and I sat out in the stands for a game. And I can tell you, I love the suite because of the food and because I can get to the bathroom really quick. But there is nothing like the atmosphere of being out with the fans. Like, it was so much more fun this Illinois game when I sat in the stands and everybody's going nuts. We're high-fiving people I've never seen before and we'll never see again. That's the fun, exciting part of it. I get JD's side. I'm old. I feel it. There's a lot of days I don't want to go or do anything. But the atmosphere at the football games right now is exciting and fun, and it is worth the effort of getting to and going to do it.
Yeah, and I'm
absolutely.
Not talking.
I got to take a quick break here, JD, so I can keep us on track. But Todd, thank you, sir, as always.
You bet. See you next week.
Appreciate you, buddy.
Take care, Todd.
Enjoy it.
See you, buddy.
We've got JD Campbell with us. He'll stick around. We're back with more. Zach Osterman joins us next. Jeffrey the Greek will be on later as well. Man, it is a full action-packed day. Back with more Indiana Sports Beat Radio right after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this fantastic Friday. And we've got it loaded. JD Campbell with us, former SID for Indiana, and Zach Osterman from the Indy Star, the IU Insider for the Star. Zach, how are you doing, sir? I bet this is a little surprise for you.
No, JD's never a surprise. JD never sneaks up on me.
Oh, man, a busy week for Indiana University. A huge soccer match tonight. I talked about it earlier. UCLA coming in, which will pit the two winningest programs in NCAA men's soccer history, one by wins, UCLA, and the other by winning percentage, Indiana at 77%. Indiana has won six out of those last seven matches, though. So I know you're a big soccer fan. And will you head out to that game, or you got to take off for Iowa?
No, we got to head to Iowa City. We got a long drive ahead of us. I mean, you're right. It is a big game. You know, UCLA didn't pick up their first win until I think like 2 weeks ago. They had kind of a rocky start to the season, but I think they've won their first two Big Ten matches, if I'm not mistaken. And obviously, Indiana has lost two of its first three in conference after a really, really good non-conference, which has I think been a little bit jarring for IU soccer fans. So it is going to be a big one, and you know, it's a reminder of a time. I mean, when you think about, I don't want to get too, you know, big picture here, but when you think about sort of who built soccer in this country, because, you know, professional leagues were so sort of fly by night for a long time that, you know, the old NASL was probably the one that stuck the most, but the Cosmos and you know, Vancouver and some of the players that came over like Pele and Beckenbauer. But, you know, it really what allowed soccer to – what gave soccer an anchor in this country was college soccer. And Indiana's obviously one of those programs. Virginia's one of those programs. But, man, when you look at UCLA soccer, like, you're basically talking about American soccer in the 80s and 90s. Like, I'm looking at their alumni list right now. Jonathan Bornstein, Carlos Bocanegra, Benny Fellhaber, Brad Friedel, Frankie Hayduke, Kobe Jones, who was, you know, really, really good when I was a kid, Leo Stoltz, of course, Sidgy Smith. I can't remember if he played there or coached there or both. You know, Nick Raimondo, like Eddie Lewis. I mean, UCLA soccer was college soccer and therefore was in many ways American soccer in the late 80s and early 90s, because we did not have, you know, professional pathways for a lot of these players. They had to sort of make their bones at the college level. And you know, UCLA. I know it's not necessarily been, you know, I think they haven't won a national title since 2002. They haven't, I'm looking at it now. They've only been to the national championship game three times in this century, which obviously is, you know, is a lot more modest. The last time they won the Pac-12 conference tournament was 2023. Before that was 2012. So it's not quite what it used to be, but I mean, it is still, you are talking about, you know, two of the top brands in the sport. You're also talking about two programs that frankly, in a lot of ways, helped build the sport at a time when there were not the professional pathways and structures that there are now in the United States.
Yeah, I want to shout out a happy birthday to Mr. Don Fisher. Thanks, Gritty, for that. Happy birthday, young man. He looks younger and younger every time I see him on
Methuselah.
I'm telling you, he's unbelievable. Still plays golf out of season now. He don't get to do it in season much, but he has to be having a great time right now, JD, with this football program.
Yeah.
After what he, I wouldn't say he went through, but after what it was like leading up to that, and now last week getting to call that game, I can only imagine how much fun he was really having with that crowd, because there's no way, and we talked about the windows being open or not, their windows are open. There's no way that doesn't feed into you and what you're doing, because it's natural. It's human nature.
Well, for me, the greatest thing about Indiana's, rising in football is I just knew over the years, I met so many people that were diehards and had loved Indiana football, and even when they were struggling, would come out and support it, buy season tickets. And so for them, this is why the joy in my heart about it is really, you know, where it is, because I want them to experience the things that they're experiencing right now to make up for maybe the heartbreak that they had for years and years and years.
Well, it certainly turned around under Kurt Cignetti, and that begs the question. And anytime I hear it, I say, well, that's not an issue, but it's going to start coming up again as Indiana's success continues. Can Indiana keep Kurt Cignetti when teams like Florida are on the schneid and teams like that are more traditional powers? But my response right off is, why? That's not Kurt Cignetti. He loves doing it at Indiana because, A, nobody did it before. Everybody said it couldn't be done. It seemed like it couldn't be done, but yet he's doing it, and he's doing everything he needs to do at Indiana. The resources are going to continue to grow. Now, whether or not he can actually win a national title there, I think that he can. I think they might get damn close this year. Who knows? But I think that he likes the challenge of doing something that nobody else has done. Going to a Florida, they're supposed to win. You're supposed to be good. So that's part of why I think Indiana would kind of increase salary if that came about as well. But as far as just being drawn off by a program or that, Zach, I don't see that happening personally.
I mean, listen, I would never say never, you know, like right. I said this, well, somebody brought this up to me earlier, this, you know, that all it takes is one, you know, I think there are some reasons why a coach like Cignetti, you know, would not find certain jobs appealing. Like if you talk about Florida, for example, it's actually not as good of a job as I think people think it is in the SEC. There are some infrastructural concerns there. You know, I think up until recently, there were probably some concerns about the ADs. Steadiness there, Scott Strickland. They have a really, if we're talking Florida specifically, they have something really weird going on. Like they tried to hire a university president, I think from Michigan, and then the Board of Regents like rejected him. So they still have an interim president, and they have to pay him like $2 million if he doesn't get the full-time job. It's all very weird. And I think if you're Kurt Cignetti, you would look at what you have at Indiana and you would say, well, I know who my bosses are. I like my bosses. You know, the infrastructure around me, the alignment, that's a word a lot of people like to use, is very stable. There is the money part of it, which is just like, it is going to be hard to pay Cignetti a lot more money than he's already making. Like, for example, I'm looking at, and this is, these numbers I think are from last year, but I'm looking at USA Today's salary database. You know, Sark is making 10.6, or at least last year was. I think Ryan Day got improved terms after he won a national title, but last year he was making 10. Caleb DeBoer was making 10. Mike Norvell was making 10. Brian Kelly was basically making 10. Cignetti's already making 8. So if Indiana, and I suspected Indiana would find the money to push that north if they needed
in
to.
In about 10 seconds.
He's also 65 years old at the start of next season. I know he says he's got tons of energy for it. I think he said he wants to coach until he's 75. But, you know, it's one thing if you're established in a place and they know your methodology and all of the sort of, you know, constituent parts have been positioned around you. It's another thing to pick that up and move it somewhere new, even in the portal era. And there's also, listen, at the end of the day, there are only so many places that are going to have the money to pay someone the way that we're talking about paying a head football coach. And that is going to be, you know, if you look at this list of the highest paid, and Cignetti makes 8 right now, which last year would have put him just behind Brent Venables. So he would have been the 16th highest paid coach in the country if he was making that a year ago. If you look at the 15 ahead of him, only one of them is not in the Big Ten or the SEC. That's Mike Norvell at Florida State. So number one, you know, I think we all can see a change is coming at Florida. I'm more skeptical of the idea of Alabama. Certainly now Oklahoma feels like it's moving off the table. Of course, you can always – I mean, it seems like we'll have the perpetual James Franklin question. If an SEC job opens, can he be lured away? I think a lot of people expect Florida to start with Lane Kiffin. There are some ready-made American Conference coaches that I think would make really good SEC coaches, beginning with John Sumrall, who – I heard someone once describe him as basically raised in a test tube to be an SEC head football coach. So I'm not like Cignetti's going to show up on some of these lists. And like I said, all it takes is one. All it takes is one school that puts the resources in front of him and says, sorry, Fred, I know 75 is not old. It might be old for the demands of being a college football coach. You know, that puts the resources in front of them and the opportunity and everything. But as things stand right now, I think Indiana's in a good place to convince Cignetti to stick around. And to your point, I think what certainly he's realizing is, and, you know, he loves the phrase no self-imposed limitations. I think what he's realizing is there are few, if any, limitations to what he can achieve here because of how much the calculus around how you win in college football has changed in the last 5-10 years.
JD, any comments to that?
Pete Carroll.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying
no. I'm not talking about him going to the NFL. I'm talking about, I think coaches are coaching longer and longer, and others are retiring earlier and earlier. It's just a matter of your own perspective.
I think that there's more. I think there's probably more longevity in the NFL where you just have less to deal with, you know, and like that, like, yes, college is trying to resolve some of this and moving to a slightly more NFL model and all that. But there, you know, it is any football coach would tell you the NFL lifestyle is preferable to the college lifestyle in terms of how much you have to work, the length of your days, the way you structure what you're trying to do. So, I think there is a difference between college and the NFL. But, I mean, JD's point is valid. We have seen plenty of coaches go into their 70s. And, again, you know, Indiana is not going to be bothered by – like, Indiana, especially because Kurt Cignetti has already settled here, is not going to be bothered by the idea that, you know, okay, he's 65, he's 66, he's 67. I think that would be more of a drawback in a new job where the question would be, well, what is like the 8-year plan? What is the 10-year? But again, all it takes is one program that says, you know, we have all the resources you need. We have all the infrastructure you need. We'll give you all the assurances you need. And we don't care if it's only for 5 years, because in the portal era, 5 years is a lifetime. So that's why I say never, but I do think Indiana is in a position where certainly I would be surprised if the resources are a problem. Let's put it that way.
I agree. And ironically, I made a comment last night noticing across the NFL landscape how young on average the coaches are now. They are all, and it's the same with other things. Hell, you look at NASCAR. Hell, there's some drivers in there that look like they don't have driver's licenses. But there's been such a youth movement in a lot of things. But in one place, there's not. And I think that is still college football. JD, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I don't think he again, I don't know him. I've never spoken to him. I don't know if I even know anybody on his staff other than Jeff and Greg. But the one thing I do know is that over the years, there are a lot of coaches that they may see, you know, they may look at the menu and say, wow, that prime rib looks good. Of course, I bring up prime rib. And then
are you hungry?
Then they get well, and then you find out, well, that's a 3-day-old cut. It doesn't look like it did on the menu. And that's very prevalent. You always have buyer's remorse.
That's what I'm talking about when like the money is not what coaches want anymore because they're making more. They know they're making more than they'll ever need. And I mean, we've seen coaches, particularly coaches that are in, you know, maybe a little bit of trouble job security wise, take pay cuts so some of that money can go into their roster because they understand that, like, it doesn't matter if I'm making $6 million or $7 million or $8 million if I can't go get players. You know, like Mike Gundy is a great example. Whatever you think of Mike Gundy, Mike Gundy did things at Oklahoma State that people probably did not, even the widest-eyed Oklahoma State fans probably did not believe possible. He had them on the doorstep of a national championship game. That's not what that program's built for. Mike Gundy didn't get dumb. Mike Gundy couldn't get players. And
why was that, though? They had T. Boone Pickens money, man.
Well, you're starting to see is that people have figured out, and by people I mean donors, have figured out that they can basically just choke off a coaching tenure, that they can just say, we're going to close the checkbook until we make a change. And, you know, let's be really frank about this. In the cold light of hindsight, that is sort of what happened to Tom Allen. You know, there were complaints at the end of Tom Allen's tenure about there's not enough NIL investment here. There's not enough this, there's not enough that. Indiana had, I'm pretty confident in saying, about 3 times as much NIL money on the first day of Kurt Cignetti's first regular season game, on the day of that FIU game for football, than they had the day Tom Allen was let go. But why is that? It's because the people that fund that effort believed in Kurt Cignetti and therefore put their checkbooks where their belief was at a level that they just weren't going to do with Tom Allen. And I think there's a decent chance that's what happened with Mike Gundy. But my point is, it's not about how much you pay your coaches anymore. Because your coaches know they're going to make at the level we're talking about more money than they'll ever need. And their buyouts are going to be eye-watering. And you know, they're going to get, even if they get fired, they're going to get taken care of just as much as if they were still working. What they need to be successful is the infrastructure. What they need to be successful is confidence that their working relationship with their AD, with their president, with their collective head, with their boosters is going to be very positive. They need assurances that they're going to be able to staff and retain the way they need to. They need assurances that the right amount of time and effort is being put into expanding their pool of resources. They need assurances that they're not going to get swept into university politics. That's why I bring up the Florida thing. Like it's weird there right now. And I'm not saying they can't get a good coach because of it, but like, I don't think people appreciate that what's going on at Florida is going to be a question that Scott Strickland is going to have to answer to an agent, if not a head coaching candidate. Like, at minimum, it is going to be something he's going to have to deal with when he goes to whoever his top target is and says, what do I have to do to get you to take this job? You know, Indiana, I suspect Kurt Cignetti feels that Indiana doesn't have a lot of that, that a lot of the headaches are off the table, that the resources are good. I'm sure he would say they could be better, but they're good. Who was it? Can't remember who it was, but it surprised me. It was a school that was reported this week to be putting about, it was a Power 4 school, and it's bothering me now that I can't remember who. reported to be putting about $13.5 million into revenue of its revenue sharing budget into football. Indiana's putting like 15.5. So, you know, Indiana's even being competitive with other football programs in how it's splitting up its rev share. I think Kurt Cignetti would look at a lot of the infrastructure here and say, it's good. And I know it, and I'm comfortable with it. And he would certainly say, I've amassed the political power now to be able to get more of what I want, to be able to call my own shot more often. And so when, like, I'm rambling, I'm sorry. But like when JD talks about that stuff, it's not about just the coach getting a bigger contract anymore. These coaches know they're going to get paid $8, $9, $10, $12 million annually if they're coaching at the level that we're talking about. It is them saying, do I have the confidence in the alignment with the people that I'm working with? And do I have confidence in the infrastructure that the infrastructure I'm going to need to be successful is there? Because let's be real, that infrastructure is a lot more straightforward than it used to be. Do you have money to get players?
Absolutely. Zach Osterman from Indy Star, the insider. Make sure you're giving him a follow and being a subscriber. Keep the local papers alive. Zach, we will see you in Iowa City, my friend.
Sounds good. Good to see you, JD. Go Braves. One more weekend.
All right.
Yeah, he's got it all, baby.
New shirt. Oh,
man, I got both these guys. You're killing me. My Reds are stinking. This is a
comfortable driving shirt.
That's the best.
Yeah.
We've got more coming up. Jeffrey the Greek joins us next right after these messages. Welcome back to Indiana Sports Beat Radio on this Friday. Jeffrey the Greek is with us. Alec Lassley not feeling well today, and we wanted Jeffrey on anyway from Tape Drain and Eyes on Big Podcast. Don't forget about that. Make sure you're following them with that. And your partner, Big Kurt.
Big Kurt. Yep. Yep. We record two pods a week during the season, preview every Big Ten game, and then post view every game on Sunday. So boy, do we got a slate of Big Ten games this weekend, Jim.
Yep, and luckily it's going to be hot enough. You don't need any Pave Drain just yet, but now's the time to get it before you need it. It's better to have it and not need it than to need it and not have it.
I love it.
That should be your slogan, yes. Man.
We got all kinds of slogans. That's we'll just add that one to the mix. But and by the way, if anybody's got hardcover issues, this could be if there's any civil contractors or civil engineers that are listening to the radio show. If you've got issues getting under your hardcover, that's a water quality and quantity thing that you have within any municipality. Pave Drain can help you out there too.
Well, there you go. That is
there you go. Good
to know. Yeah, great weekend of football ahead of us. First of all, let's revisit Indiana, Illinois. How surprised were you by that? I know Indiana winning probably did not surprise you. You have enough of a football mind that you were probably expected that, as most of us did. But I'm not going to say that any of us in any – if anybody says they did, I think they're going to be lying. Nobody expected what the hell we saw. Indiana put up the most points in the history of the Big Ten Conference against a top 10 team. And it wasn't the offense as much as it was the defense that shocked me, Jeff.
It was all over the place. I picked Indiana to win and cover. So as far as that thing, absolutely not. If somebody would have said, you know, would have had a flux capacitor and a DeLorean and came back to me on Wednesday of last week and said, one of these teams blew the other team out. Who was it and by how much? I would have said Indiana by 3.5 touchdowns, you know, would have been my guess. Not Indiana by 5 touchdowns, you know, like that was 7 touchdowns, whatever it was. That was absolutely insane. Certainly there was a snowball effect that I believe we saw, you know, in that game when Illinois was losing guys in the secondary to injury and suspensions, one, you know, left and right. You got a bunch of guys that are out there that have no idea what they're doing. If you show a weakness, Siggy is going to light you up and not stop until the clock goes to double zeros. So that's how it works in Siggy's world. Illinois gave him the opening and he took it.
Yeah, it was mesmerizing. But more importantly, I wish you could have gotten a taste of Memorial Stadium. You're familiar with that at Kinnick Stadium. It's been like that for a long, long time, and it's much bigger. What does Kinnick hold? My 65, 70, 80,000?
Yep, right there. Right, just short of 70.
Indiana set a new record at 55. That's squeezed. I don't know how they squeezed that many people in. Yeah. But the noise, it was staggering how loud. There is no question that was the loudest that place had ever been in the history of that stadium since the 60s when it was built. Biggest home game in the history of IU football, if you want to be honest, because not only did they've had tons of top 10 teams in there, but this is the first time they were ever expected to win, and they did handily. Yeah. So now we move forward a week. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say a lot of Memorial Stadiums in the Big Ten. It's nice to see Indiana's Memorial Stadium is now, you know, getting up there. And it's like I was saying a little bit earlier, it's a bowl, you know, so you pack it full of people screaming. It's going to get loud. So it was a great thing to see.
Well, Illinois, not only they play in a Memorial Stadium, and it used to be, I think, Assembly Hall. Which,
yes, that's correct. That was a little tidbit I learned last week that I had no idea that was the case. That's cool.
And which is ridiculous. It's like, dude, that's like calling your stadium the Rose Bowl or something. There's one Assembly Hall. I mean, give me a break on that one.
Great.
But whatever. This week, man, we got a lot of great games. And the SEC has got a big time matchup with Alabama and Georgia. Alabama's got to get off the pot, man. I feel bad for my man Kalen DeBoer. He's a great coach, but I was thinking about this yesterday, and I heard someone else mention it prior to me. The difference in coaching Southern football players. There is a difference. Let me tell you, it's a different, but also it's old fashioned. The phrase that teams take on the personalities of their coach. That is exactly true. You think about the old time Indiana basketball teams. They were tough as nails. They had to be. But look who the damn coach was. Kurt Cignetti has had that impact on the Indiana football team. They have that swagger. They have that confidence. They have that chip on their shoulder. And they play to be perfect. They play to minimize mistakes and to just hurt you. And they've been doing a pretty good job of that. Kalen DeBoer, you think back to the Alabama teams under Nick Saban, same thing. You got this guy rushing the side. Boy, kind of like Cignetti, not happy. It was just never seemed like he was happy. Right. Pissed off all the time. Well, Kalen DeBoer is a much easier going guy. And I wonder if that is just not sparking a fire with these Southern football players who need – you know, back when you and I played, you got coached kind of hard. But I never thought a thing about it. It was how you expected it.
Normal.
If it wasn't there, you would be like, I remember our senior year in high school. They didn't take it as hard on us. And we were all talking about it a lot. We were expecting it and it didn't come. Yeah. And we ended up 5-5 that year.
Yeah, I think one of the huge differences.
I don't forget stuff, man. Trust me, I don't forget anything like that.
I think the huge difference with the SEC and the Big Ten is that there are more teams in the Big Ten that are developmental programs and coach a system, and they recruit the right players to fit into the system. In the SEC, what they have always done is just find the most talented players and let them run around. The issue is the paying of the players is now above the table, while the SEC had the lion's share advantage for 25 years of paying the players under the table, aka they got the most talented players with the highest stars. Now that star rating is dispersed out among every place, you know, Big Ten, SEC, Indiana, where have you, now that you have that, they have to actually coach, you know, they actually have to run a system in the SEC and develop players. They ain't good at it. And I'm telling you, that is what is going on right now. And as far as Kalen DeBoer, be the man. Don't be the man that follows the man. Be the man that followed the man that follows the man. Like, yes. Don't. And I mean, I had put a tweet out, you know, right after he got the job. Amazing hire, Kalen DeBoer. But tough position that he's going in. And you wonder if the system that they are trying to run with their offensive coordinator that, you know, has been with Kalen DeBoer pretty much the whole time except for last year. Now he's back in the system. I still don't know if we have the right quarterback to run that system at Alabama, but we'll start to find out Saturday night. But come on, Jim, that's enough of SEC football. Let's talk Big Ten football here.
Only thing else I have to say about SEC football is I'm sick and tired of ESPN just promoting the hell out of the SEC only. Fox does not do that. Kirk Herbstreit has been on the John Mateer bandwagons before the snap happened. And yep. It became way too obvious. I'm like, ease your roll, bro. We're three games in and you're crowning him already. Yep. So ridiculous there.
Yeah. Herbie promotes the SEC and his dog. It's about the only two things I ever see from him.
You know what? Have you noticed that his dog has been persona non grata this year? It seems like I was thinking. The fans
he's all over been the place.
Getting heard.
Yeah, no. I've still seen a lot of posts with it. Let's talk Indiana, Iowa. Come on now. Let's get into this.
Before we get to that, let's talk the Big Ten. If you look at the NCAA stats right now, this is not your grandfather's Big Ten. The top four and five of the top six throwing quarterbacks are from the Big Ten.
Yep.
Wow. What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here, Jeffrey?
I'm old enough to remember when that was the marker that we used to determine who the best conference was, along with winning national championships. That's what I heard. If you won national championships and you had the best quarterbacks, that was the best football conference. I don't know, but it seems like to me that the Big Ten has won the last two national championships and we have the best quarterbacks in the country this year. Hands down, bar none. I am picking overs like they're candy on Halloween night, man. Overs, overs, overs. And they're mostly hitting. The only one I didn't hit last weekend was Oregon State. I have no idea how that thing didn't go over. Oregon was moving the ball up and down the field the entire game. But it's been incredible. Now, certainly Big Ten defenses now are back on their heels more than what they have felt like. So you always get a little bit of a yin and yang with that. But there's no doubt. And I think maybe Indiana's got the best quarterback, not only in the Big Ten, but the entire country right now. So you guys are winners of the big quarterback sweepstakes as much as anybody.
Well, and it's not just a quarterback. They've got All-American type wide receivers. They have a running backs room that has put up at over 300 yards rushing in four consecutive games, had lost one of their top running backs, had somebody else step in and rush for 100 yards in the last two consecutive weeks. So there, and an offensive line that gave up one sack. The quarterback has thrown zero interceptions. They're not turning the ball over, and the defense is giving them a bunch of opportunities. So that has just been fun and remarkable to see. What are some overs you like this week?
Absolutely love the over in Ohio State, Washington. I prefer the over in Rutgers, Minnesota. I right at the over in Indiana, Iowa. About the only under I really love is Northwestern, UCLA. So if you want to suffer through that game and take the under in that one, other than that, I see overs and overs and overs.
Yeah, Northwestern, UCLA, the battle of the knots, as I call them, in the Big Ten.
But it's still a compelling game, you know? It's a touchdown spread that could go either way. Game.
It will determine who's going to finish last in the Big Ten, probably.
Yeah, right around there. I will say, I personally believe every Big Ten game this weekend could go either way. Certainly, there would be a couple upsets for that to happen, but there is potentially compelling football from start to finish on Saturday in the Big Ten.
Does Indiana, Iowa fall into that category?
Am I picking that to happen? No, I've got Indiana winning and covering in this game as much as it pains my black and gold heart to say it. But can I ask you this, Jim? I mean, have we seen even nearly as good of teams, you know, come into Kinnick and have a rough situation?
I've said it all week.
Yeah, I mean, it's
a tough place to play. Always has been, always will be. Doesn't mean something can't happen special, but you do not bank on that. Iowa always has a good, solid defense, although they gave up 300 yards to
a passing to Rutgers last week. And Fernando Mendoza has yet to even throw for 300 yards. He's done all he's done by not throwing. Mainly because he hasn't played a full game. He didn't throw a touchdown pass in game one, period. And he's only played three quarters in the remaining games since then.
Yeah. So two things can be true at once. Iowa's pass defense, unfortunately, not as good as it has been in the past three or four seasons. So I want to be clear. Iowa's pass defense, not as good as I like. There is a certain corner that might wear
They were normally known for having a good secondary.
They've been normally known for having good everything on defense, D-line, linebackers, and secondary. I mean, we've had we had a first-team All-American 5 years in a row at linebacker. So, but two things can be true at once. The Iowa's secondary, and especially pass defense, not as good as I would like it to see. We wonder if there's going to be a little bit of a shakeup at the cornerback spot. Part of why Iowa's defense looked better in the second half versus Rutgers is because of a personnel change, and Iowa also started getting pressure on Ethan Calikmanis. The other thing that is true, not that we have to go deep into Rutgers, but Jim, trust me, they have got some amazing wide receivers at Rutgers and a quarterback that's been in the system. Their defense, not great, but their offense, especially their throw game, is really good. They have three receivers personally. One of them for sure is going to get drafted. The other two will probably wind up on NFL rosters, at least for camp. Like, they have got studs. And when you have a quarterback that's been in the system like he has for a long time, you see results. But if Iowa comes out on Saturday afternoon with the same type of coverage versus Fernando Mendoza and the Waffle House, like, the Waffle House ain't just going to be open. KFC is going to be open. Taco Bell, it's all going to be open if we let number eight cover your stud receiver that long.
What will be most difficult for Iowa to defend, the Indiana passing game or the running game?
I would say passing game. Now, with that being said, personally, you know, a tenet of the Iowa defense under Phil Parker is to not let the rushing attack kill you in any capacity. So you have got to control Hemby and stay in the running lanes, like, and take your chances with Fernando Mendoza. The other thing too is we haven't seen Fernando run it quite as much because there has been no need to put your quarterback in harm's way. But that's another thing Fernando Mendoza brings to the table is his rushing attack. So that's what scares me maybe as much as anything is you think you got everything covered up. He takes the ball and runs around the edge. As far as the question we just got, can Iowa get pressure with four? I don't think so. I mean, can they get a push with four? Sure. Can they get Holmes consistently with four? Unfortunately, I don't think so. The good part of Iowa's D-line is that we have 7 to 8 guys that we can rotate through that I feel really good about. Unfortunately, none of those 7 or 8 or 9 guys are elite. We don't have a pass rusher that is going to keep Siggy up at night as far as scheming against. It comes in waves, but when we had some success and things looked much better in the second half versus Rutgers, we were bringing a fifth guy.
Yeah, so what is Iowa going to have to do? Because for one thing, I thought when they brought in this quarterback from South Dakota State that they were going to be throwing the ball a lot more. I think it picked up a little bit last week, but that was maybe because it was Rutgers. It hasn't been what I thought.
It's been more of what I thought. You should have listened to the Eyes on Big podcast. We put out team previews every year.
And I'm sorry.
Yep. So what I've been trying to tell people is that I had said way back in at least July, August, if not July, Mark Gronowski is not being brought in to throw the ball 30 times a game. Like, that's not what his style is. That is not how he's going to be used in the offense. What we're looking at is 200 yards passing with 60 yards rushing. Okay. You know, 250, 260 total yards a game, two or three touchdowns with maybe two of them being on the ground. Okay, so this is an efficient offense. I have been joking that Mark Gronowski is essentially middle class man's Tim Tebow. Okay, he's a physical guy. Oh, he's nifty. Man. But if you think he's going to be this fluid, you know, passer that sits back there and picks apart the center, the middle of the defense, that's not what Gronowski is. He the goal is to bring an extra guy in the box to defend what he does with his legs. If it starts coming down, check, throw the ball over top of him a little bit. So we have started seeing that the last two games. Unfortunately, it took a game or two to get that going. But this is obviously a huge step up for Iowa over the previous two games versus Albany and the Rutgers defense with Indiana. So it helps that it's coming at home. But, you know, this is the best defense that Iowa's faced all year for sure.
What your final prediction?
I've got Indiana 31, Iowa 23. So a little bit of a homer pick there maybe, but I've got Indiana covering it. If the spread goes up to 8.5, you know, chalk on a couple points for Indiana. So I've got Indiana covering. I think there's a chance with Iowa's O-line. This is one of the better O-lines. Well, this is the best O-line Indiana has faced thus far. I think Siggy kind of alluded to that a little bit where he threw even extra shade at Brett Bielema and Illinois. This should be a little bit of a step up over the environment versus Illinois. I just don't know if I see enough cohesion there with Iowa to pull out the win. I hope maybe that we're going to have a good game Saturday afternoon in Kinnick Stadium, but we will find out soon enough.
It'll be great regardless because we get to wave at the kids, and that is the greatest tradition in all of sports. Jeffrey the awesome. Greek from Eyes on 10 podcast. Don't forget, pavedrain.com.
Absolutely.
Appreciate you, sir.
Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure. Hey, up next, Tom Kakert from Iowa on 3 Hawkeyes Report joins us as we'll get a view from the other side right after these messages from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this fantastic Friday before another epic weekend of college football. Tom Kakert from the Hawkeyes Report, Iowa's on 3 outlet joint. Just Tom, how have you been, man? Good to see you.
Hey, Jim, it's good to talk to you.
Well, you don't have to go anywhere this weekend. Lucky you. Rest of us have to hit the road, man. But and why is it? It seems like Indiana always plays at Iowa. Damn it! The last time they played was at Iowa in 2021.
Yeah, I can remember a lot of trips to Bloomington too, and over the years. But yeah, when they had the East and the West, we just didn't get to see you guys all that often. So. It'll be nice, but I'm not sure Iowa fans are going to love the result. We'll see what happens. But after watching Indiana last week and seeing what Coach Cignetti's done at Indiana, it's pretty frightening.
Well, the last time that Indiana headed to Iowa City was with a lot of expectations then. Trust me, I remember, and watched the wind go out of those sails very quickly as Iowa jumped out to a 14-0 lead, shocking Indiana fans when they had Michael Penix. But I think this is a little bit different situation. Indiana is playing amazingly, as you pointed out, but not just on one side of the ball. They're doing very well on both sides, allowing less than 100 yards rushing. They've got the most tackles for loss in the country. They had 7 sacks last week. Offensively, we know what's going on there with Fernando Mendoza and the running game, which has been amazing at 300-plus yards rushing for 4 straight games. What is Iowa going to have to do to win this game?
I think it's twofold, and it starts up front both ways. I think the defense has to stop the run. I was at the stats yesterday when I was writing up my game preview, and you know the run. I thought Iowa was doing well running for 200 a game. And I look at Indiana, and they're chugging up 300 yards, and it's 3-4 different backs that are doing all the damage. And it's not like you've got to stop one guy. Got to stop a lot of guys, and I think that's a key. And if Iowa's going to have any shot at winning this game, they're going to have to run the football. They're just going to have to be really effective You know, I've talked to some people around Iowa that, not anybody on the coaching staff, but people that, know things, that, know football, and they feel like there's a chance that Iowa can run the football in this game. If they can, and they can control that clock, the best way to slow down the Kurt Cignetti offensive train is to have him standing on the sidelines, having Fernando Mendoza standing over on the sidelines. So they can control the clock, run the football. Gronowski does just what he needs to do and not make mistakes, chip off some eight-minute drives, get some points on the board. Then you've got a chance, but it's going to be it's easier said than done, as it always is.
Yeah, I agree with you, because I personally don't think that a running team can beat Indiana, because Indiana scores so damn fast. Their average scoring drives are probably about 3.5 minutes, and if you're eating up, taking up 5.5, 6 minutes to score, when you get the ball back, and if you don't score on that drive and Indiana scores again twice in 6 minutes, score twice in the same time, but you score once, and all of a sudden you have to play from behind. Running the ball is not how playing from behind fares very well, but Indiana has to take care of the ball. They haven't thrown an interception this year, knock on wood for them, but both of these teams have been pretty clean. But I thought Iowa's offense was going to be a little more dynamic this year, but it seems pretty like it's been in the past so far. And they've lost a couple of running backs. Indiana's lost Lee Beebe, one of their team leaders early on. But Iowa also, they're hurt in the running game. They've lost two of their key members.
Yeah, I would disagree with you a little bit about Iowa's offense, just in the fact that Mark Gronowski can run the football. They have not had a quarterback. I mean, Brendan Sullivan could do a little bit of that last year, but Gronowski's just a totally different animal, because he has a ruggedness to him where he can go lower his shoulder and get a couple more yards, where Sullivan was just kind of quick, you know, and it was more design. Gronowski's kind of pulling things, you know, out of thin air and making plays. So I just disagree on that. But, yeah, they're missing Xavier Williams, who has, you know, was their leading rusher up until last week. And that's the leading rusher. Actually, there are two leading rushers right now. Xavier Williams missed last week. He's got a shoulder injury. Jazz Patterson, who was off to a really good start and leading the team currently in rushing, he is out with an ankle. So they're down two backs, but Kamari Moulton was their starter coming into the year. I really like Nathan McNeil, who I think will probably be their second choice. And then they've also got Terrell Washington, who can be kind of a scat back type of running back who can catch some passes out of the backfield.
And then on the defensive side for Iowa, if they can slow Indiana's running game down, then you have to worry about the passing game, which has been pretty prolific with Fernando Mendoza and his All-American type receivers, which are three deep in that regard. And then they've got the tight end who's coming on. That is going to be a very, very troublesome spot for the Hawkeyes, I would imagine.
Yeah, trying to slow down that Indiana air attack is going to be a problem. And you look back to last week when Rutgers threw for 330 yards with the Ethan Calicmanis and, you know, Strong and that whole group of receivers. And they're really talented from Rutgers, very talented three receiver set that they were running. And Calicmanis was on point. But what Iowa did was in that first three drives, Rutgers scores, and then after that they only scored one other touchdown. So Phil Parker made some adjustments last week. The problem is I don't think he can wait until halftime to make adjustments this week. If he does that and Indiana's cooking and they wait until halftime to really kind of make some significant adjustments, it could be 35-0 or something like that, or 35 to whatever Iowa can put on the board. Because Indiana, as you said, scores so quickly, and they just, you know, they can go through like a hot knife through butter.
Well, knowing Kurt Cignetti, and I say word knowing, you know, cautiously, just because he may not like it. he likes to make statements, and it's not personal, That's the thing. It's not personal, but I think he likes to make statements, mainly because Indiana takes a lot of shots. They're still taking shots about their damn schedule last year. It doesn't matter what they do. And I'm like, whatever, he's like the same. He's like, well, we'll just prove it on the field. And they have so far, and they'll be tested. This is a test. Going to Iowa, tough place to play, man. Kinnick Stadium is just tough. It's old-fashioned Big Ten football, old-fashioned Big Ten football fans. And then they go to Oregon the week after that. So, but he will want to have as resounding a win as possible, I would imagine, to further enlighten the rest of the world that Indiana is for real. Indiana is this year's Indiana again, but that's why they play the games.
Yeah, I think he, just based on the few comments that I saw, he might have enjoyed putting up 63 on Mr. Bielema, who does like to kind of poke the bear a little bit sometimes. So
I think Mr. Bielema was the head coach at Wisconsin back in 2010 when he hung 83 on the Indiana football team.
Yes, he did. He hung 83. And I remember when Big Ten title game when Mr. Bielema put 70 on Nebraska too. So he's done that to people. So he should recognize game, as the kids would say. I've kind of dubbed Kurt Cignevi Coach Bad Intentions, because he has bad intentions for whoever he's going up against. If he can drop the anvil on your head, he is going to drop the anvil on your head, and he doesn't feel bad about it, nor should he. I mean, you know, Indiana has taken their fair share of hits from teams over the years. I know I always put some big numbers on them in the past. So he's going to, you know, he should. He, you know, that's part of college football today, especially when you're in Indiana, is style points. And you got to put up style points when you can put up style points, especially on the road.
No question. Well, we'll certainly get a top chance to see that. If you're an Iowa fan, make sure you are a subscriber to the Hawkeye Report with the On3 outlet there. Tom, I can't thank you enough.
Thanks, Jim. We'll see you over there.
We'll see you. Yes, sir. Tom Kakert from the Hawkeyes Report on 3 Outlet. Big thanks to everybody. Today is a crowded show, mostly to you guys. Hey, we're back tomorrow with the post-game show after Indiana-Iowa with myself and Coach Griff. Make sure you tune in for that. Appreciate you guys. Enjoy the rest of your day. Until then, I'm Jim Coyle. I will see you on the radio.
Thanks for listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube page for more clips and team coverage of Indiana basketball, football, and more. You can also find full episodes and tons of other content on thehoosier.com. We'll see you next time for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio.
Zach Browning here to tell you about an offer you simply can't pass up. If you're looking for the best coverage of Indiana football and basketball, which includes recruiting, weekly chats, podcasts, as well as access to the best national team out there, then look no further than thehoosier.com. The best part? It's just $1 for the first week. Oh, and did I mention that you get a full year of access to The Athletic when you sign up? You can't beat the coverage, and you can't beat the deal. So head over to thehoosier.com today and sign up for just $1. It'll be the best decision you ever made.